because of the shit you take every day. So don't tell me that doesn't hurt. And then you don't need the people because you got your church. You gotta take your head out of the sky because there ain't nothing there but the satellites. And we are the Nonprofits. I'm Dennis Lube, and along with Jeff D. and Russell Glasser, we're the two up quarks and one down quark making the Proton that's coming to you live from a point in space-time called Austin, Texas, on the 2nd of April, 2014. Like a Bose-Einstein condensate, this show is indistinguishable from the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state. If you want to entangle more of your particles with the ACA, you can call their voicemail at 512-220-6561 or superposition your state with their website at www.atheist-community.org. The Nonprofits exposes its hidden variables live every first and third Wednesday of each month from 7 to 8:30 Central Time. Your observations can affect the collapse of our wave function by following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com and joining the chat room. So sit back, decohere, and enjoy the show.
Thank you, fellow subatomic particle. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
It's another show.
Yes, it is.
In case you were wondering what has brought us together here today. Are we, in fact, going out into the internets at this time?
I believe we are, yeah. So,
there were some issues. We got a slightly late start.
Yeah, if you are listening live,
then you're very patient.
Thank you.
Not you, them.
No, I mean, I'm talking to them.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All you people. Not you!
All you listeners out there in Radio Land.
We got here and the main computer that's supposed to broadcast had no internet.
Huh.
But luckily, I am a software guy. Took me 25 minutes to figure it out.
Did we just get it another internet then?
We turned something off and on again.
That often does it. Did you check the drink tray?
The IT crowd would be proud of us.
Yes.
Well, great. So let's just jump right into it, shall we?
Okay.
I got a bunch of listener mail today.
Good, because I was so busy with the internet, I didn't have time to pull up all my stories.
I just wanted to comment on the exceptional introduction from Dennis Lube on the 319 show. It was witty, but not too pretentious, clever, but not too self-aware, and professionally delivered.
I do walk a tightrope.
Don't let it go to your head.
Sorry.
I challenge you all to up your game to Dennis's level over the next couple of shows.
Well, they'd have to pre-script their dialogue to do that.
Well, Otis, we
got like Roger Ebert reviewing our show from Beyond the Grave or something. That was a high quality analysis.
Yeah.
See, the intros, I write those before the show. Everything else on the show, we make up right on the spot.
Not everything. Yes. Not absolutely.
No, not everything. Yes, we make up the news.
Yeah. Everything you hear as serious news on this show, just off the top of our heads.
Yeah, we just made it all up.
When news breaks, we did it.
bits of the Pope Francis and Pat Robertson stuff that I do. Bits of that are not pre-scripted so much, but preconceived,
yes.
Like thought about in advance, but that's about it. Yes, Dennis, that was also one of my favorite intros,
yes.
That one that you did.
Ah, well, cool.
Very deserving of these.
Which
of
one
these
was it?
Props.
Was it the alien?
It was on the 19th, which was the second show in March. So that was the show prior to this one.
Oh, okay.
That was the last one you did.
What was the last one I did?
Well, it's not very helpful to get this positive response if you can't even remember.
Well, I can track it down.
What one they're talking about. Okay.
Pray continue.
Pray continue?
Pray continue. You heard me.
Continue praying until something happens.
That's right.
Russell, you ready for some news? Or is it not time?
Yeah, I got something.
Okay. Go.
Okay, so in Minnesota,
Okay, not in Minnesota? What?
No. Okay, different story.
Not in Minnesota. Where
wow.
are we? Where are we then? We thought
are
for a moment.
We are on the NPR website where they ask, can a television network be a church? The IRS says yes.
Oh, great.
Uh-huh.
That can't be exploited.
Flip on Daystar television at any hour of the day and you'll likely see the elements of modern televangelism. A stylish set, an emotional spiritual message, and a phone number on the screen soliciting donations. Based in a studio complex between Dallas and Fort Worth, Texas. That's kind of in our backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And broadcasting to a potential audience of 2 billion people around the globe. Daystar calls itself the fastest growing Christian television network in the world.
A potential audience?
I don't know what that means.
That I would
means
guess that
that's
that
an
means,
audience we don't have yet.
I'm pretty sure that means that's how many people have televisions that are hooked up to networks that could show their shows if people were turning to their channel.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
Do
so
we have an
it
a
also,
potential audience of
so
2 billion?
So it also has a potential audience of absolutely no one.
That's true.
If nobody
right.
is watching. Okay. Go ahead.
The internet or the Internal Revenue Service considers Daystar something else, a church. And I guess that means, yeah, okay. Televangelists have a choice when they deal with the IRS. Some, like Pat Robertson and Billy Graham, register as religious organizations. They're exempt from most taxes, but still must file disclosure reports showing how they make and spend their money. Daystar and dozens of others call themselves churches, which enjoy the greatest protection and privacy of all nonprofit organizations
Good
in America.
Grief.
Churches not only avoid taxes, but any requirement to disclose their finances.
Uh-huh.
And as NPR has learned, for the past 5 years, churches have avoided virtually any scrutiny whatsoever from the federal government's tax authority.
Remember the Joel Osteen story? Did we cover that last time?
I do not recall what happened.
There was a break-in and money stolen, and when people found out how much, they got an inkling of just how much money was being laundered, collected by Osteen's church.
Right,
and this
right.
has been a news story.
I'm
just curious if anybody remembered that story knew which category he claimed to fall into. But never mind.
Yeah. I don't know. Let's see. So both networks, that would be, went and skipped ahead, but okay. So there are some big networks that include, the Christian Broadcast Network,
right.
Trinity Broadcasting Network, and Daystar Television. They're each worth more than $250 million combined, according to available records. But Daystar is the largest religious TV network in America that calls itself a church, and there's no way for viewers who give an average of $35 million to Daystar each year to be certain how their money is spent.
Right. Nor do they want it made clear to them.
Yeah, because, you know, when you give something to those kinds of networks, you know, it's a faith-based donation. And
right.
you don't look into things that are faith-based.
Yeah, you don't want to see the Rolls Royces they're buying and the helicopters.
Yeah. I like that. You don't look into things that are faith-based.
Yeah.
Like, it's not only – it's so wonderful that you're just trusting that thing without really have any basis for
mm-hmm.
that trust.
Yeah.
And it's so wonderful that this organization could be the thing that is being trusted without any basis whatsoever.
Yeah, you
to
not
just
only...
rake in millions of dollars? Millions.
Well, you're supposed to have
millions
that.
Of dollars without anybody having the slightest reason to think they're spending it on anything other than gold watches.
You're supposed to have that childlike guilelessness, you know.
Uh-huh. Right, because then you make a better mark.
Yeah. Well, and you're not only then having faith that the God exists and that the God wants you to give money to somebody who's doing something nice,
right.
but you also have faith that whoever claims to be speaking for the God isn't just some, you know, secret double agent who's
right.
conning you or perhaps using your money to defeat God in some way.
Right. I mean, if you've postulated a opponent to God known as the father of lies, and you gift him with unknown powers of persuasion, how could you possibly be taken in by such a thing?
Yeah, it's like, I remember maybe it was back when I used to listen to Hank Hanegraaff, the Bible Answer Man. I heard him on more than one occasion take on the question, how can we know that the Bible is accurate and we're not just deceived all the way?
Right.
And he basically concluded, well, it has to be accurate because, you know, the way we understand God to work, it can't be impossible to know the truth and not be deceived by somebody with evil intentions. So it's just, you know, we just have to believe that we're right.
Oh, God.
Yeah, typical.
We don't care so, whether we're right or not.
So why is this a news story?
Just decide.
Is it just an expose of these guys? Or
yeah,
is there something
apparently.
Going on?
I mean, they were just looking into it. But,
okay.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm not
that.
Sure if anything
hundreds of millions of dollars
here.
Tax-free. You can have a studio, you can have a television studio and not pay any taxes.
Right.
Awesome.
Shall I?
You shall, yes.
Watching The Atheist Experience and listening to the nonprofits each week is like my escape from stupidity. I find it comforting to know others feel similar and that I have an outlet for the frustration I feel toward the phenomenon of modern religion. I think it is strange to see so many adults buying into this romanticized notion of an all-powerful father figure who will save us from our own sins, through which his creation has been made possible. I became an atheist when I was in primary school. I went to Catholic schools from kindergarten to year 10, just before college, what we call college years, 11 to 12, before university. And from early primary school, I found it strange that people believed in the stories we were being brought from the Bible. By the way, Russell Glasser, you're my favorite host.
Oh.
This is a letter, by the way, this was
in
about...
In your faces.
This is a letter about... Atheist experience and the nonprofits.
Oh, okay, cool.
So, I was thrown for a moment there, but yes, you do. You are a host on the Atheist Experience. One of my favorites as well.
The
Atheist
thanks.
Experience. You behave like a gentleman and get your point across well. Although I especially love listening to Jeff D when he goes off on one of his hell rants.
That's true. I enjoy that.
A hell rant.
You know, I have only done that a couple of times. People
know.
Think I do it all the time because it's most of what you can find by me on the YouTube.
it's the most
exactly.
popular.
It's like people who watch all the YouTube clips of us and they say, "Do you talk to only stupid people?"
95% of them, at least. Thank you, all of you, and if I was living in the area, I'd be signing on board. At the moment,
cool.
I'm studying a science degree in psychology, and I want to specialize in culture and religion. That's from Kay. So there's some props for Russell.
Find us the magic bullet so we can deconvert them all.
More news or shall
I? Yeah. So I've got a story that starts off bad, but then there was an update just a day or two ago.
Oh,
so,
okay.
So it gets better.
Roller coaster. Ready.
Yes. Huffington Post reports that Olivia McConnell is 8 years old, but she's already helped to introduce a bill to the legislature of her home state of South Carolina, which will name the woolly mammoth as the official state fossil if it's passed.
Oh, cool.
An unexpected challenge to her proposal arose in the form of two Republican state senators, Senator Ken Bryant and Senator Mike Fair, who want to amend her bill to make it clear that God created the fossils by adding text from the Bible's Book of Genesis. They were totally going to block her, basically, from doing this, because the idea that there are fossils of woolly mammoths, that whole thing is suspect.
Uh-huh. To them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lieutenant Governor Glenn McConnell, who is not related to Olivia McConnell, ruled Bryant's proposed amendment out of order because it introduced a new subject. Bryant proceeded to revise his amendment to describe the Columbian mammoth as, quote, created on the sixth day with the beasts of the field. Senator Mike Fair jumped into the fray on the side of Bryant, placing an objection on the bill. Fair has previously gone on record as saying, to teach that natural selection is the answer to origins is wrong, and has blocked South Carolina from adopting newer education standards on the teaching of evolution.
Stupid, stupid people.
Very stupid.
Blocking smart people.
Yes, sadly.
That's how it works.
but what's anyway,
the update?
So March 31st, the story is State Senator Mike Fair said he withdrew his objection to a bill that would make the Columbian mammoth the official state fossil after he learned that a school child had put in so much work to urge legislators to adopt it. Yeah, that and after he heard all the horrible press that he and his state were getting.
Yeah, the blowback you got. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I'll vote for the bill standalone, and I appreciate the young girl, Fair told the Greenville News. And maybe through the whole matter, paleontology will get a little bit more emphasis, and maybe people will do some more reading, he said, pretending that that was a good thing for him.
Yeah. Don't believe him at all.
Are you guys tired of hearing us being praised in these emails yet? Because I got more.
I don't get tired of it. No, yes.
No, go ahead.
No, it doesn't make good shows.
Shower me.
It doesn't make good shows.
Shower me with their love.
Let's just switch. Let's switch to something else. Right, let's switch to something potentially a little bit controversial for some of our listeners.
Oh, my.
I've been reading and watching a bunch of stuff about this Atheism Plus thing and was wondering if you guys would be willing to spend a few minutes talking about it when you get a chance.
Well,
let's spend those minutes now. We have – I think we've mentioned this before on the show, but it might have been early on.
I'm pretty sure that this – when people write to us, they usually write assuming that we're going to be on a side that – almost always they're wrong.
It's possible.
Well, let's find out. While I personally share a lot of the humanist views of the Atheism Plus movement.
He put
movement in quotes. Scare quotes.
Oh, my.
Yeah,
okay.
I think you're right about this one, Russell.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I like the notion of lumping together a bunch of secular views with my plain and simple position on the non-existence of God. Well, then don't. What on earth has the atheism movement, the Atheism Plus movement, got to do with your views on the non-existence of a God?
He can
still
call his atheism atheism, and the people with those views in the movement will call theirs Atheism Plus.
Right.
And it's
different. That's fine. They are distinct.
They aren't hurting you. In other words, I'm pro-choice, pro-women's white rights, and as far as I can see, on side with most of what Atheism Plus represents themselves as, but I don't see how one of those things has to do with the other. Fine. Then don't join.
Right.
Unless people
discriminate against you for not being an Atheism Plus member.
Right. Other than that, you know, you need to be maybe a member to be on their site.
Yeah.
Which is not discrimination. That's just their rules. Mm-hmm. I totally don't get these people that freak out about Atheism Plus. Now, apparently there was some hostility on one side or the other of this, and I don't care where it came from. Clearly, both sides are now they tend to be – have a knee-jerk reaction to each other because of the bad blood that has arisen. And if that's still going on, maybe it's blown over. That would be great. But I totally don't understand this concern about what other people are doing.
I kind of do. Okay. I think that they get the mistaken impression that Atheism Plus is going to be default atheism.
Yeah, where are they getting
seen as default?
I agree that that's a mistaken.
No, I am a definitional atheist. You know, uh-huh. I go atheism means that one thing. You know,
right?
Don't believe in God. That's it.
Right.
But yeah, if you start a thing called Atheism Plus, okay, it's a different word. It's a different thing, yeah. And you can add as much baggage as you want to it.
If I started the Atheist House of Pancakes.
Okay.
What?
No, go on.
If I started the Atheist House of Pancakes, I would be an atheist with a house of pancakes. And I'm not – my existence has nothing to do with whether anybody else likes pancakes, whether pancakes have anything to do with atheism. They do when it's in my restaurant because I have the Atheist House of Pancakes.
Right.
Right? In the context of what I'm doing, those things have to do with each other because I put them together when I made the organization that was the two things. Right?
Right.
If I said, you know, the Sweaters and Barbells Association, those things have nothing to do with each other. But there's – if I started that group and there were enough people that wanted to lift barbells while wearing sweaters at the same time, it would be a thing of its own that would have – reflect not at all on other people that liked just sweaters or just barbells.
Right.
Nothing to do with anything. Get off your fucking high horse. You are not a extra special snowflake for disliking some other thing. Just don't be involved and you're fine. Yes, Russell.
All right. All those are good general points to make about the fact that if an atheist group decides to have a set of principles, then you don't have to be involved. Fine. Right. The same arguments would equally well apply to an atheist libertarian group.
Sure.
Which we would not join. But we would not attempt to stop the creation or meeting of such a thing.
Or bother stating an opinion.
Yeah.
And thinking that, you know, we're on to something important here that we've got to convince others of.
Right.
Atheism and libertarianism must never meet.
Right. But I would like to actually talk beyond the general vague principles about how you don't have to care about something and point out the context in which the term atheism plus was sort of identified.
Is this going to be historical or is this like relevant generally to the group?
Atheism plus?
Yeah.
Both?
Okay, go ahead.
We've talked a fair amount I think we've been not shy about stating that we on this show are pro-feminism. Generally in favor of like racial diversity. And also, as an atheist group, as the atheist community of Austin, we've had to deal on many occasions with sort of difficult interpersonal situations where, like, some people made other people uncomfortable, and some people had to work around that. That happens in a lot of atheism groups, and in a lot of cases, there's a certain amount of dogged insistence that atheism must only apply to belief in God and must not encounter any such thing as mission creep. Okay?
Right.
I have a comment, but I'm afraid it's going to get back into the territory of general principles that you don't want to be in, so I'll just keep it to myself.
This is a good idea. I'm not going to say it's a good idea. I mean, it's noble sounding in principle, except that when you form an atheist group, you also want to form a group of people who feel generally comfortable hanging out with each other. And let's say for the sake of argument, and this is not entirely for the sake of argument because this is a thing that really happens, you have a guy showing up to meetings all the time who loudly and openly brags that he uses hypnotism techniques to get chicks to do whatever he wants. And then proceeds to really badly hit on women who were just there listening to his spiel. Ugh. And making them uncomfortable and basically driving them out of the group because they feel like there are too many unpleasant people coming to the dinner or the game nights or whatever. And so the principle of supporting everybody doing whatever they want often conflicts with the other principle of having a group which makes as many people as possible feel comfortable. I'm going to pause there and see if you've got any input.
You started by saying when you start an atheist group, you want to try to make people as comfortable as possible. I would just point out that if you start any group, any group, you want it to be comfortable to the people that are in it. I'm not sure where you're going with this. Are you defending atheism plus by saying these are people who have narrowed their focus at the expense of some other people so that their group can be more comfortable with itself?
I suppose.
Sounds perfectly reasonable to me. Yeah. I'm just checking to make sure that's where you're going.
And they can work towards the aims of their group.
Yeah, okay. So the atheism community at large, by which I mean to include lots of local groups and lots of national conventions. We're talking Skepticon, I think, is going on right now, maybe, or this weekend. American Atheist Conventions, which I know I attended the one a year ago.
Right, from the erudite to the troglodyte. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of these places have run into this serious faction of rampant sexism or kind of, I don't want to say necessarily racism, but I do want to say people who aggressively don't care about broadening the pool of speakers.
Yeah. To be fair to our listener who wrote this.
Yeah.
I think there are absolutely people out there who want to keep the world safe for their sexism. And and this guy isn't one of them.
Okay. I'm not accusing him of being one of them.
So I just want to be fair to him.
I do think that,
while also, you know, berating him and telling him to get off his high horse and
that the term
get over himself.
Atheism plus has been vilified and the well effectively poisoned in much the same way that in a broader sense the term atheism itself has been vilified often. So to the point where you get people like Neil deGrasse Tyson actively doing videos saying like, well, you know, I don't really believe in God, but I don't want to call myself an atheist either because I have a concept of what atheist means and I don't like being associated with that group.
Right.
I think the moment that somebody, in this case Jen McCrite, who is a friend who blogs at Freethought Blogs along with the Atheist Experience blog, suggested, you know, I'm really tired of being sneered at and dismissed and getting rape threats once in a while by fellow atheists. Primarily because I'm a woman. And I wish that there were some kind of term. And she threw out atheism plus off the top of her head.
Yeah.
As in atheism that would encompass more than just saying, I don't believe in God and that's where the whole thing ends.
It would include more humanistic.
Humanistic is a good concept. Yeah. And a lot of people frame humanism as if it were in opposition to other things.
Right,
like, you know, I'm not a feminist, I'm a humanist.
Oh, good grief. Who says that?
So, so what's your point?
So my point is, I support this notion that in order to be an effective community that holds effective meetings, atheists in general ought to be concerned with these kind of social issues that make a group kind of coherent and effective.
Okay.
And not chasing it and not becoming like an old white guy's club.
See, now that's different than the point I thought you were making. I thought you were making the point, hey, you know, there's going to be different groups and they're going to try to cater to different segments of the population, and different segments of the population have different shared values, and this segment of the population shares those values, and so they're forming an organization that encompasses those values so they can all feel comfortable together. Your point is broader than that. You are arguing that for the utility of humanist feminist inclusiveness,
right,
for the general goal of having atheist organizations that are successful and can hold together.
Yeah, the atheist community of Austin has position statements. We talked before about Dave Silverman and his attempting to bring in more pro-lifers by saying, "Hey, we atheists can be pro-life too." And yeah, they can. It's technically accurate. But the atheist community of Austin in particular has taken on, you know, has put out press releases supporting pro-choice positions because a lot in general, most of the members feel that the only real arguments for, being against abortion boil down to religion eventually. And I think a lot of the same thing could be said about a lot of other prejudice issues.
Yeah. For me, I think that if it is the case that that the values encompassed by the Atheism Plus movement are the ones that will lead to larger, more cohesive, longer lasting atheist organizations, then we'll just see that happen over time. And I don't personally have a problem if somebody wants to say, we are the atheist, you know, fascists of the United States. We are the atheist masturbators who like to just sit around and look at girly magazines and get our jollies. I mean, if you want to, if that is the group you want to make an organization for, go right ahead. Not my business.
Yeah, just so, don't, and those not, people have
and
a
not
right
anybody
to
else's
exist.
Business.
Right. Those just people so, have a right to the exist, issue of, but I think in an evolutionary of, sense, they will fail.
Well, there's your prediction.
Yeah.
And you're just, not supposed to do with
and
a
just don't claim
here.
That all atheists follow should follow your precepts.
Or don't claim that just because there is some group out there that is that amongst the things they're into is atheism, that makes the other things they're into reflect on you in some way that you don't approve of. It doesn't reflect on you. You're not in that group. Live with it. They, know, I mean, I don't understand where there's something here that reminds me of, you know, people who decide there's some popular film director that they really don't like, and they'll be happy to go on for hours and hours about what's wrong with that film director, and that's their thing. That becomes their thing, their reason for existence. And
I like hating certain film directors.
They're interesting. They're the interesting thing they can bring to a discussion is that, you know, quirky kind of off the wall position that they hold. I guess it's natural, but really,
okay,
it's not terribly helpful.
I've got a disturbing analogy.
Okay,
thinking that Atheism Plus would stain the concept of atheism is sort of like thinking that gay marriage would stain the principle of marriage.
Totally.
Yeah, it's very much like
absolutely
that.
Absolutely, totally. I think it's the exact same thing.
Because now the people that, you know, the heterosexuals that get married are going, oh, gosh, we could have had a gay ceremony. I might have been gay, you know, and it's like,
yeah. Remember
that
who's the famous historical figure who said, "I don't share your views, but I will defend to my last breath your right to voiced them?
Voltaire.
Voltaire? Mm. Awesome. Here. So can we just embrace the whole Voltaire thing a second? Just relax and deal with the fact that there are people with different interests and preferences than you who might want to enjoy those preferences together in a way that you don't want. You just don't get involved, but you should be defending their right to do that, not attacking them in letters to our audio podcast as if you thought that we were going to be some guys who agree with you and your prejudice.
Hey, they can write. They can write in with that.
Okay.
And we can talk about it. Now, here's a good slogan. If gays can get married,
yeah,
then if I get married, people might think I'm gay. I wonder if that's the underlying problem.
I'll just finish letter here. I've got no plans of joining the Atheism Plus movement. Good. That's a good move. You don't like it? Don't join it. Totally with them there.
Right.
And kind of wish they would just cut it out. Ditch that.
Fuck you.
Yeah, I mean, ditch that. They can do whatever they want.
Let me rephrase. Of course, you have the right to feel that way. But mm-hmm. when you express mm-hmm. that, I think you're a dick. Which is what – and I kind of wish you would just cut that out. Atheism has a hard enough time without lumping it together with a whole bunch of other values. Yeah, because the last thing we would want is for people to think that atheists are, you know, pro racial harmony, pro gender neutrality, you know, pro all those other good things. We would never in a million years want atheism to be tarred
associated with those
implications.
Yeah. Well, if atheism doesn't welcome bigots, then our market is smaller.
Yeah. Well, we're doing it now. We're saying atheists instead of Atheism Plus.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I totally agree with the completely uninteresting technical point of atheism does not necessarily immediately imply all of those other things. That is totally not the point.
Yeah, I do also agree with that.
Atheism doesn't imply pancakes, but I would have no problem with an atheist house of pancakes. Atheism doesn't imply fascism, but I'd be totally okay other than with the obvious.
Yeah.
If there was atheist fascists of America.
We've gotten emails, as I recall, from people who said, why do you call your show The Atheist Experience? Obviously, there can't be just one atheist experience because atheists are all different. We're like, well, we're atheists and this is experiences we have.
Right.
Yeah. There you go.
In other words, I like to keep my atheism and my humanism separate. Signed, Mark. Well, fine. You go right ahead. Stop flailing around as if it's any of your business telling other people what they should keep separate or not.
Right.
Okay. There. You asked for our feedback. There it is. News?
No, I was just thinking about the point that some groups that try to scope in an unwelcome direction just kind of evolutionarily die. And I was thinking in particular of Log Cabin Republicans, the pro-gay faction within the Republican Party that has just found it really hard to get any traction there because I think being accepting of the rights of gays and lesbians is just fundamentally opposed to the Republican platform.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway. All right. I read that. A pastor says he tried to save a man who was swept out to sea during a baptism.
Okay.
That's not funny.
No, it's
now,
not.
Now, he was swept out to – so did this man die?
Yes.
I'm asking you to jump to the end. Give away the ending.
Oh, dear.
Good grief.
No, they didn't find him. He died.
He could be fine. No, he could be fine. He could have been wafted away to heaven.
Can you prove he didn't?
Yeah. No, there? I can't. A Santa Maria pastor whose assistant remained missing Monday after being swept out to sea during a baptism ceremony at a coastal park in northern Santa Barbara County described trying to save the 43-year-old man as two large waves overtook them. Pastor Morigro Cervantes of the Jesus Christ Light of the Sky Church told KITV that he was in the water with two others on Sunday, baptizing a man in his mid-20s while his cousin Benito Flores was assisting.
Oh, so the guy swept away was not even the baptizee.
Wow. He was an unbeliever.
Well, he was assisting. Would you assist a baptism?
How far
I guess he could have been
an
in-the-closet unbeliever.
What?
I mean, how far out in the surf do they go? Do they drop off the edge of the continental shelf or something?
Oh, you? How much have you been in the ocean?
Not that much, but strong currents. Yeah.
I got in some severe danger when I was living in San Diego. Yeah. Oh, but you just mean how far out do you have to go to perform a ceremony?
Yeah.
You just need your toes wet, right? You need to be able to reach down and grab some water and splish it on the guy's head.
No, some of them have to dunk you all the way in.
Fine, lie him down. Now you go another 5 feet out, farther out.
That's what's going on at the end of the intro for True Blood. So,
Of course, if you happen to be a Greyjoy serving the drowned god.
Right.
Yeah.
They get a little more intense.
Yeah.
And for them, it has to be seawater. Whereas for Christians, I believe they're allowed to get away with, you know, fresh water.
Yeah, and the process of actually almost drowning is said to be the event that actually makes your baptism real.
Is it a baptism or a waterboarding? That's what I want to know.
I think it's a bit of both.
Wow.
We're talking about Game of Thrones, fourth season. Of the TV version will start this Sunday.
Uh-huh.
Woo!
Wow.
Woo.
So that's terrible.
Yeah, that's very sad.
Can't really point at that and say, that's one of the bad things about religion.
No.
Because they could have, it could have been two oceanographers.
Yeah, it could have been
out
two
a little
surfer
too far.
Guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Right. It's unfortunate.
It is.
But. Okay. I love catching the podcasts and appreciate all the fun discussion and antics. It's nice to have a show, which I can listen to where people address issues from a perspective that makes sense to me. Jeff, hope to catch you on an episode with Matt again. Here, this person who wrote to the nonprofits is again referencing the other show, the Atheist Experience. Hope to catch you on an episode with Matt again. You two are perhaps the most entertaining pair, but I still have to give props to Martin and Russell. Hey, I thought this was my props to Jeff letter, and all of a sudden there's this Russell thing coming up. I want my turn. Also, by the way, just to make this clear, I get this periodically. I am not currently in the co-host rotation on the Atheist Experience. I dropped out of that entirely to free up my time so that I could be the full-time host of this show.
Right.
So it's not impossible that I'll show up randomly, you know, given the proper circumstances, but there is no – there is no scheduled plan for me to be on the Atheist Experience again for the foreseeable future. Keep up the good fight, guys. You helped me out of the religious closet years ago. It's funny, but over the years, even my hardcore Catholic dad has really loosened up after our discussions. Many of the arguments I learned to break down from good folks like you. Signed, Tom.
Good.
Thank you, Tom.
Since we started late, are you keeping track of time?
I am. You want to know how much time we have left?
Yeah, I'm just wondering.
I'm going to check the little timepiece here. Hang on. We are that far in, halfway in.
Okay.
Dun, dun, dun.
Halfway in.
Yeah, we're halfway in.
I guess I've got a little while longer before it's time for the regular segment.
Okay.
So I'll just read some more news.
Yes.
Mississippi legislature passes religious liberty bill.
Oh boy.
You just know that's going to be a Orwellian
like
name in Mississippi. That legalizes discrimination against gay people.
Right.
Uh-huh.
The Mississippi legislature has passed legislation that would allow people to use their religion to justify discrimination. It seemed last month that the religious liberty bill had sufficiently stalled after the House voted to send it a study committee instead of passing it, with many members noting how it could be used to promote discrimination. However, both the House and Senate have approved a conference report on the bill, advancing it to Governor Phil Bryant, a Republican, with problematic language. Mm-hmm. Religious liberty bills, like the one vetoed in Arizona, differ from other states' Religious Freedom Restoration Acts, or RFRAs for short.
RFRAs.
Yep. Because they extend religious protections to businesses. Mississippi's bill has the same problem because state law already defines a person to include all public and private corporations. Thus, if Bryant were to sign Mississippi's bill into law, it would grant all businesses in the state a license to discriminate based on religious grounds.
Right, just like the Arizona bill did. Mm-hmm. They learned not a single damn thing from that.
No. It'll be great when other religions latch onto this.
Want to discriminate against the bad people. Gosh darn it.
You want to discriminate against the Christians.
Well, sure. The non-Christians will discriminate against the Christians.
Against
first,
the Christians,
first
and that will raise holy hell.
So. Yeah, I heard a really interesting discussion about the Hobby Lobby case on Bill Maher's show recently, where someone said, you know, when everybody's talking about religious rights for corporations, if the corporations are people in and of themselves, then why are the religious right or why are the religious views of the corporation always assumed to be the religious views of like the owners, like the CEO?
Right.
Why, for instance, don't the many, many employees of Hobby Lobby who might like to have birth control get to have some say in what the actual religious views of Hobby Lobby might be?
Did you read the story where there in it was it came out that Hobby Lobby invests in corporations that make contraceptives and birth control stuff?
That's interesting.
Hmm.
Which is evidence that they're not adhering to the principles they claim to have.
Right. As long as it makes money, they can be two-faced.
And also I read another story which implied that if this passes, then it opens – because it would mean that the corporation's views are the views of its board of directors, that therefore – the article was entitled something like the saloon door swings both ways. Mm-hmm. That if the corporation is allowed to exert its religious freedom because its religious views are the views of its board of directors, then a person who wants to sue the corporation can just go and sue the members of the board of directors because it's been established that the views of the corporation are the views of the board.
Enshrined in the board. Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's interesting, but legally, I think part of the whole point of forming a corporation is that it limits your liability.
Yes,
the
currently.
The British term, LLC.
Yes, currently, but the argument was that this case, if decided in favor of Hobby Lobby, breaks that down. That is the point.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
It hard to believe that the Roberts-led court will do anything that allows some kind of gotcha
This same article claimed that there are essentially no legal opinions submitted in favor of the case. There's a term for this, and I've forgotten what it is.
I know what you're talking about, and I can't remember.
Right, where outside groups will write their letters to the court saying, we agree with this side because X. This article claimed there were essentially none of those, and that the reason is the business community does not want this to pass. for this reason.
That's interesting.
Because it would break down the immunity of the board from prosecution for the actions of the corporation.
Huh. That is very...
It could have been completely wrong. I'm just telling you what I read.
Okay.
I don't have that background to be able to say.
All right.
Okay. More.
You go ahead. Yeah.
Quick FYI, large construction projects are virtually never completely funded when they start construction. You mentioned that Ham's ARC project only had some small percentage of the funds raised, but that's not really a mark against it. That's pretty standard practice.
Hmm.
Now, it's still a fucking retarded endeavor, but for separate reasons. That's TD from California.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much have to agree with that.
Okay. I think the point I was trying to make, though, is that this is the money potentially raised by one event, debating with the science guy. The money that was raised from that is a particularly ridiculously tiny amount, and the idea that that is just a normal step in the process of seeking continual sources of funding to keep the project going, I think is a little far-fetched. That was my point.
Yeah, well, it could be that, you know, they were just on the cusp and dollar 48 that took to kick it over into, okay,
we know where they said they were.
Yeah.
And it was not on the cusp.
Right.
It was essentially impossible for them to raise the money,
we'll
given what they've raised so far. And now, you know, Ham is crowing about how that one debate raised enough that they had more. Well, yeah, but more at your, on the scale of a large construction project, the idea that that was a significant amount, I think, is ridiculous.
Yeah, well.
But we'll see.
All the money hasn't come in. We'll see.
Well, all the money from that debate has come in.
Yeah.
Russell?
Let's see. We had some bad news in Mississippi. Let's go to one of the few places where there could be worse news.
Uh-huh. Uh-oh.
Saudi Arabia.
Oh, right.
Welcome to Saudi Arabia, where a new law is labeling all atheists as terrorists.
Cool. I'm a terrorist now.
From Slate.com, no one has ever accused Saudi Arabia of being the Holland of the Middle East. Ha, very droll, Slate.com. You know, Holland, the country of unbridled liberalism, where they encourage euthanization via legal pot brownie consumption. But a recent report from Human Rights Watch shows new laws in Saudi Arabia have taken the country a step back and bulldozed what little public space there is for fighting dissent in the country. The changes predictably come under the guise of fighting terror. And what's the number one terrorist threat facing the country? Atheists.
Number one?
Yeah, apparently.
We weren't just on a laundry list of other things that they think are terrifying?
As a matter of fact, it is Article 1 of the new law.
Wow. It's specifically atheists.
Yes, calling for the ban on calling for atheist thought in any form. It's a rather strange headliner to the whole who is a terrorist question, considering atheism doesn't historically raise many red flags in the pantheon.
Think they've already completely blocked the internet in that country? They must have.
Likely, yeah.
Yeah.
The provisions, which are almost imperceptibly broad, create a legal framework which appears to criminalize virtually all dissident thought or expression as terrorism, according to Human Rights Watch. The new laws have largely been brought into combat the growing number of Saudis traveling to take part in the civil war in Syria, who have previously returned with newfound training and ideas about overthrowing the monarchy. And there, in a nutshell, is why you would block the internet.
Is there a bunch of atheism in Syria? Is atheism a hotbed? Is Syria a hotbed of atheism?
You know, I don't know.
How would we know?
And maybe look that up.
Who would tell us?
Just trying to connect those dots.
Yeah,
Syria is not going to admit to being a hotbed of atheism.
Syria is, of course, primarily Islamic.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
The religion of peace.
Yes.
All righty.
So we have some dead air while we look up things on the ESM at all.
All right. Well, maybe.
Here's a story from June 10th of last year.
Yeah.
Atheist Syrian boy reportedly executed by rebels. Oh.
So the idea that Saudi Arabians are going off to Syria and coming back all fired up with atheism is kind of a stretch.
True, but they're probably coming back anti-monarchy, and so there's like a whole raft of things that they're bothered about, and, you know, might as well blame atheists up front.
Right.
Here's another letter. I heard Jeff refer to the Bible as the big book of multiple choice. By this, he meant that everybody takes away different understandings and interpretations of the Bible, usually in a manner that reinforces their own personal beliefs. Well, that's a much kinder way of putting it than I would, but yes, essentially. I've been thinking about this for a while. Putting practicality aside, would it be technically possible to break the Bible down into an actual multiple choice questionnaire? By that I mean, after every sentence or statement, the reader would answer, one, whether they thought this was something that was meant to be taken literally or as a metaphor, and two, whether they agree with this statement or not. If this multiple choice version of the Bible could be created, it would be interesting to give it to Christians and have them answer it in full. I would expect that each person's response would vary greatly from any and all other responses. What kind of impact would this have on the religious community? Yeah, I think it's the interesting point would not be that they differ from each other, but that they differ from the damn book, right?
Mm-hmm. Each person would write their own Bible, and inevitably there are going to be
contradictions in their answers, and that would be pretty interesting.
It would be fun.
What if a priest completed the multiple choice questionnaire and released their answers for their church members to review? How much of a discrepancy would churchgoers tolerate before they said, I don't see eye to eye with this priest's interpretation of the Bible? That's an interesting one.
I like that.
And exactly why they're not going to do it. Because I know for a fact from discussions with my mom, who was a preacher. She's retired.
Oh, okay.
There's stuff they learned in seminary, facts they learned in – well, things they believe are facts. They learned in seminary that they do not share with their parishioners on purpose,
right?
Intentionally, don't share it with them because, as she put it, they're not ready to know that.
They're not level 7.
And my response was, well, they're not going to get ready to know that if you don't start fessing up.
Right.
But the point is – this is apparently standard operating procedure, at least in the Methodist Church, for
withholding information.
For pastors to intentionally leave their flock with what they consider mistaken impressions because they don't want to scare those people away.
Disturbing.
Because it's not about actually educating those people.
No.
It is about getting those people to cough up money.
Right.
To pay your bills, frankly. In the very unlikely scenario that the Pope completed the multiple choice questionnaire, I suppose the Vatican would proclaim that his answers were the right answers. Well, they would if he was in his chair.
Special chair.
His special chair where everything he says is infallible.
Yeah,
otherwise,
that doesn't sound stupid at all.
Otherwise, they could backpedal. And that all Catholics should agree with what he deemed to be literal and metaphoric passages. I think that would cause many Catholics to realize that their values aren't in sync with the Vatican's. And again, I want to go back. When I refer to it as the big book of multiple choice, I'm not talking about the whole question of whether individual passages are literal or metaphorical. That's not getting at. What I'm getting at is you can find passages in the Bible that you can use to say you should, treat homosexuals as equals. Or women as equals, or people of other races as equals. And you can find passages in the book that justify your hatred and discrimination against gay people and women and people of other races and whatever you like. That's the kind of multiple choice I was talking about. And those passages could be metaphorical or
right.
or literal, and doesn't really matter. As long as the reader can believe that there's something instructive there, they don't have a problem with metaphorical passages. They don't think that a metaphorical passage is not a place where they can be instructed.
Right.
They think that the metaphor stands for, means something, and that they should pay attention to it. If I've done a good job of articulating my point, and this also came off as interesting to you, it would be neat to challenge the internet to come up with this multiple choice Bible and see if that would lead to anything.
Wow. Have they done that already?
I have seen, survey things where mm-hmm. you're asked a bunch of questions about what your religious beliefs are. And then you're smacked in the face with the internally inconsistent views that you hold. Those exist already.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's necessary to do the whole Bible. Plus, there's different translations of the Bible, and they say things different ways, and I'm not sure how fruitful that would be. But yeah.
But I do like the pastor filling out the form and sharing it with his parishioners, because – that could clear a lot of pews, I think.
But is there such a thing like for each denomination, the list of their specific interpretations and views? Does that exist?
What, do you think there's a FAQ? I don't think
so. I'm sure that some denominations are more organized than others. Yeah. And you're not talking like Baptists in general. You're talking like Northern Conservative Fundamentalist Baptist Great Lakes Region Council of 1879 or whatever.
Yes, I don't care. Exactly. I don't care how finely
specific.
I don't care how finely grained they are. And I can also answer my own question.
Do.
At least in the case of the Methodist Church, right, mm-hmm. that my mom was representing. No, if there is such a document, it is not a thing that is shared with the general public, because that would be the thing that told those parishioners stuff they're not ready to hear.
Know. Yes. Things man was not meant to know.
Yeah, I feel like the notion of a religion – I mean, in the first place, you can't nail down religious facts the way you can nail down scientific facts, and that's why – religions keep diverging and diverging and diverging over time. So,
right. But that's a survival tactic. When what you're trying to sell people is stuff that's just made up in the first place.
Right. So the methodology of religion is to present yourself as if you know absolutely everything that's going on, and having a specific list of things you might find yourself in opposition to, bits and pieces of it, would seem to be contrary to that, to that goal.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Of course, we all know about withholding information is one of the favorite things of, like, Scientology.
Oh, yeah, of course. Right. And, I mean, different branches have a more or less strict... Mm-hmm. Or,
so that's you know, where the Methodist Church is missing a trick, because what they uh-huh. could do is they could make each of those things that their parishioners are not ready to know a little package of, you know, pay us this much money and then we'll tell you this thing.
Right.
Oh, sure.
The money makes you ready to know. That's how Scientology operates.
Good idea.
I didn't come up with it. L. Ron Hubbard and his flunkies.
Well, if I started a religion.
Oh, no, don't even go
it
there.
It begins.
Yes.
All right, I'm going to share my thing that I don't want to, because I'm afraid that it'll actually catch on. Here's my new Christian denomination. Okay. I think there should be a new Christian denomination where the premise is it's not that God is teaching morality to humans. Humans are teaching morality to God. God is this big cosmic baby entity that needs to grow the fuck up. right?
Mm-hmm.
They would probably use the word fuck in there.
Well, sure, probably not.
But this totally fits the Bible, right? Because in the Old Testament, God is just this
spoiled,
petulant brat.
Uh-huh.
And by the New Testament, he's showing some slight inkling that maybe there's something to this, you know, treating people reasonably thing. But he's still got a long way to go.
And then eventually we get to the abolitionists who claim all the credit to their religion, when in fact they were just taking the cultural sentiment of getting rid of slaves and then teaching it to God.
Right.
I'm with you.
I think that could be really successful.
Except you don't get to know that right away.
Instead of the feeling great about yourself because the whole universe was made specifically for you and you're going to be taken care of by God after you die. Well, you're still going to be taken care of by God after you die, but that's because God loves you so much because you are such a caring, loving parent figure to God.
Yeah. And you feel good about yourself because you helped God.
Right, right. You feel good about yourself because you get together in church every week and you talk about moral issues, right? And you get to feel wise because you tackle these deep, deep philosophical problems and come away feeling like you got somewhere.
Wow. This is not a terrible idea.
I think it is. I think it is because I don't want Christianity to morph into something that can survive.
Right, right.
I want Christianity to stay exactly the way it is and that I want it drowned in a bathtub.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we seem to be past the 1 hour mark.
We are. Is it time for your thing?
Before we get too late in the show, I think we better get to
Shit Internet Apologists Say.
Two thumbs up.
Thank you.
Internet apologists saying this week?
Let me introduce the topic of this week.
Okay.
I hope this works. That's right. It's the movie Frozen.
Parents will recognize that tune.
Is that what that is? I haven't seen that one.
Yes.
Yes. Actually, it's quite good.
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
It's a departure in many different ways from the usual Disney formula.
I found out that the primary songwriter is one of the people collaborating on Book of Mormon, and it shows.
Oh, weird. I did not know that.
It has some surprising similarities, and it also features Josh Gad, who is the original Elder Cunningham. But that's not why this Mormon lady who blogs at wellbehavedmormonwoman.blogspot.com.
Oh, wow. No. Is there some controversy?
Doesn't
what
like
a
Frozen.
Thing to say about yourself.
She is a well-behaved Mormon woman.
Oh, man.
Catherine Skaggs. Has seen the movie 3 times.
And hated it worse each time,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Catherine Skagg says, Frozen, not gonna let it go when movie advocates gay agenda!
What?
Okay, can't translate that
yet. I
totally
didn't get that message from the movie.
I don't know where she's, we don't know where she's coming from yet, so.
Yeah, well, apparently neither does she for the first half of this article because she rambles on and on and on about how she won't, about how just in general she won't support movies with bad messages.
Yeah.
Without getting into the specifics until way, way late. So there's going to be a lot of skimming.
Let's skip to the bits that we can translate.
Okay. Well, just the introduction. The gay agenda to normalize homosexuality is woven into Disney's movie Frozen, not just as an underlying message. It is the movie. In a liberal culture, tenacious at normalizing immorality, stripping those of faith from their ability to speak out in opposition, this needs to be taken seriously. It's one thing.
Wow.
Translation. Gay people like weaving. Okay, it's facetious. I didn't. She
it's
hasn't
one
said
thing
yet.
It's one thing that we've all donated to the cause by making Frozen a record-breaking hit at the box office, myself included, but that's as far as it's going for me personally.
That's right. All they care about.
I'm going to see it three times, and that's all. Three times is my limit. Three times being immersed in this woven message of gay agenda that's as much as I can take.
Yeah.
That and
you don't protest a bit much.
That and the DVD, and that's it. The DVD, yeah. The director's cut with the extra scenes.
And some of the toys.
And the widescreen.
Okay, a lot of the toys.
The extremely widescreen.
And the Disney princess dresses.
The toys. And I'm gonna take my children to it four times and that doesn't count. Go ahead.
So what
exactly is gay about Frozen?
Just to make sure you're aware of this, I really am scrolling down quite a long way after her saying, and then we get to, ironically, I've seen Frozen three times, not because I necessarily wanted to, but because I had three sets of grandchildren who I committed to take to see this movie when it initially came out, and as it worked out, it was at different times and places.
Oh, lady. Poor me. I had to see a fantastic Disney movie three times.
Yeah. Lady.
Poor me.
Who controls whether they see the movie?
Lady voice,
I mean,
now.
Aren't you, like, gonna be all about discipline or something? I don't know.
My promise to my children is more important than the evilness of this movie.
She took the children to think. Forwarding the gay agenda.
Three sets of grandchildren.
Forwarding the gay agenda.
Three sets of grandchildren,
crime.
and then we went home, and the children engaged in gay sexual activities, which I thought was terrible, but I had promised them so.
It actually gave.
This is a good voice. I like this. Yeah. I like this new voice. Yeah.
Do you want me to do the voice or
No.
I'm good.
It actually
you
gave
do another
me a good opportunity.
Little old lady voice.
Yeah.
Okay. I won't deny either that I enjoyed watching the movie every single time for a number of reasons.
And I won't deny that I've had sexual feelings towards other women in my long and adventuresome life.
She's a well-behaved Mormon woman.
I am now, but that's because I sowed my oats when I was a young lady.
It actually gave me a good opportunity.
We used to have giant Mormon lesbian orgies. You have to when you have one husband and several wives. You have to find ways to entertain yourselves when the husband can only handle one of you at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And so this movie was to me an outlet, but also very sinful. Very sinful.
Okay,
I don't approve.
Scrub my imagination now.
Brain bleach.
Yes.
It actually gave me good opportunity to confirm my initial reaction, and in so doing, I could blatantly see that the homosexual agenda to normalize the practice was not simply an underlying message in the movie Frozen, but it is the actual story.
Children, wait. This moment is coming up right now. This is the gayest moment in the film. Right there. Did you all see that?
I'm still emphasizing.
When I get the DVD, we're going to watch it again at home, and I'll scroll back. I'll freeze frame that scene, and we can all talk about our feelings. Go ahead.
Wow.
How do we follow that? Yeah. No pressure.
I don't know what's wrong with me today.
Go ahead.
Going through Pat Robertson withdrawals, but remember that in today's liberal society, allowing almost anything, even legalizing it in the name of quote love, trumps sin. It's that powerful of an ideology, and that, my friends, is exactly what Disney is selling your children while you unknowingly stand by and watch.
Still no specifics.
No.
Yes, and I'm against parents unknowingly sharing this stuff with their children. They should know, and then just go see it three times.
Right.
Yes.
I'm still so there's like seven, eight more paragraphs before she ever gets to the point.
Okay.
So I just want to emphasize we're already quite a very long way into the article.
All right. Uh-huh. So it's just a screed so far.
I wonder if I should summarize the movie.
I'm a loquacious Mormon woman.
Well, and a sesquipedalian.
be hard to do without completely spoiling the thing, but I imagine everybody's seen it.
I haven't seen it.
It's The Ice Princess by
I have not seen it.
Oh, okay.
I have already not seen it three times.
Right.
I'm working on four times.
Yeah.
As soon as I get a chance, I'm going to not see it a fourth time.
Yeah, but this bit is going to be spoiled anyway.
So, all right, right. Fine. I don't
so
care.
The main character, Elsa, has Iceman powers.
Yeah.
She is Iceman.
Yeah. That's cool.
And she's Iceman and not Icewoman. And they're right there. They're giving a female character male attributes. And like, you can see the homosexuality beginning to creep in.
Was there a girl ice superhero?
No.
Never?
Okay. Oh, wait.
Except for this one.
My superhero game, Villains and Vigilantes, has got Madame Frigia.
Okay. I'll
She's got ice powers.
Mr. Freeze would be another.
It's Mrs. Freeze.
Mrs. Freeze, please.
Anyway, so like Cyclops, she can't control her powers. So,
I guess so.
So she put gloves on and she suppresses her feelings, which is what that song is about. Okay, so here it is.
And
with
you're
that,
not supposed to suppress your feelings. You're supposed to let your feelings out. But those feelings are only supposed to be for men. And then if you have the other kind of feelings, you're supposed to suppress them.
Well, if they're gay people, you're definitely supposed to suppress those feelings.
That's right.
And those
that's
people.
That's right. So suppression of feelings is both good and bad.
Yeah. All right, so finally, with that said, here is a brief summary of only some of the gay messaging found in the movie Frozen.
Okay.
Intended to advocate the homosexual agenda to legalize same-sex marriage and normalize the practice.
All right, give it to me.
All right, get ready to be shocked.
Okay.
Oh, my.
Elsa has a great power.
Oh, my, wait. I need my popcorn.
Okay, go ahead. Okay.
Elsa has a great power that she's been taught by her parents from the time she was a child is not publicly acceptable.
Oh, my, yes.
And she must fear its expression at all costs, thus hide it from people, even her own sister, who could be hurt by it, even killed. Shame is at the core of Elsa's feelings about her magical powers. Same-sex attraction! That's in italics.
So therefore, yes,
wow.
that is important to understand, is that all bad things are metaphors for gay sex.
Okay,
anything
pretty much it.
Anything not acceptable is a metaphor for gay sex. So,
anything different.
So putting – when Clint Eastwood didn't want to put ketchup on his hot dog in that movie, which I saw seven times, that was a gay sex metaphor when he told that man you don't put ketchup on your hot dog.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's a metaphor for sliding,
sliding
his penis into
– As Elsa's power increases, her parents urge to learn how to control it. Wait a minute. That's what
so gays have superpowers? What?
And that's a terrible message for families, because when you're teaching children that the person in the family to teach children how to handle their homosexual impulses is of course the grandparent.
Yeah, okay. As it would be perceived as evil by others, but Elsa can't. It's impossible. Her parents make the decision to close the castle to the public and lock Elsa in her room so that her power won't be discovered. Not even her sister is allowed to see and play with Elsa. Demonetization. I'm sure you mean demonization.
Yeah.
Demonetization of homosexuals by society.
Yes. Darn you, autocorrect. Yes.
And we want take away that all is money. Actually the one positive message I took away from this movie. I don't think there should be money in gay sex. In homosexual relationships.
Yeah. Frankly.
And that is what we're after. When all of this nonsense about letting gay people get wedding cakes is not against gay marriage. It's about the demonetization of gay sex.
Demonetization. But in the movie, it's like the reason they keep the two girls separate is because
Elsa almost killed. Right.
The girl
with her amazing gay sperm firing or something.
With her amazing gay powers. Yeah. No, it's – oh, good grief.
Yeah, and I mean that's not an idle threat. She almost does kill her a couple of times. It's not – you know, don't look at Elsa because she's doing bad things with her ungloved hands right now. It's,
no,
watch out for Elsa because she almost fucking killed you when you were a little girl.
Right.
Well, she shouldn't have been doing those things with her with your sister when they were little girls.
Yeah.
But.
So her italics here are about not coming out and being who you are meant to be. This is really long, so I'm just
I get the message now, I think.
So, but wait, hold on now. So she's a, here's this movie where the, if this weird old lady is right.
Yes.
Then there's this movie where the gay girl is locked away by her parents.
Yes.
And this weird old lady is against that. I would have thought she would be all in favor of
Here's the logic.
The metaphor.
You're not getting it.
Okay.
No, the logic is the parents are considered to be
bad guys.
Sort of. Or
misguided.
Overreacting.
Misguided. Yeah.
I see. Okay.
And so she's seeing them as, here's the movie setting up these parents who are repressing their poor gay kid.
Uh-huh.
And then when she comes out and decides to be herself,
yeah,
which is the goddamn message of every movie ever, right?
Be yourself.
You know, be yourself. That's Teen Wolf. That's, you know, whatever.
Not,
yeah, I can see what this woman is constructing in her head. It's
not
all
Silence
based
of
on
the Lambs.
The...
All right, not so much.
It's all based on that one incorrect premise. Wow.
Right. But every inspirational movie, right?
Yeah.
Come out and be yourself.
Uh-huh.
But in this particular case, it's gay. Oh, but she latches on to the fact that the sister has a relationship that may not be the healthiest, and I don't want to spoil that
bit. Yeah.
But
I don't care.
But she sees that as evidence that the movie is bashing heterosexuals.
Oh, good grief.
In general.
Oh, crumbs.
All right.
Well, this is basically what a conspiracy theorist does.
Yeah, just drags in all kinds of bits and pieces to serve their narrative.
Ignore what doesn't support them and actively search out and reinterpret what could possibly help their argument.
Oh, I like this. There's a crossed out bit. The crossed out bit says, oh, and did you happen to catch the gay partner of the guy up at the lodge selling supplies to Hans in the sauna with their kids? If you blinked, you probably missed it. And then after the crossed out bit, she says,
in red letters.
Yeah, because this movie is so pro-gay that it gives them about a quarter of a second.
Yeah. By popular vote, it seems as though I was terribly wrong about this interpretation. Apparently, this is some guy and his wife who only looks like one of the other children, but it's not. Who knew?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, she got caught in a thing that people rebelled against,
obvious.
and she backpedaled. We'll give her a point for that.
Yeah. And then she links to an article from a liberal website that cheerfully embraces it as super liberal. So it must be true.
Right. Because it's liberal. Therefore, the message has to be specifically the one she thinks it is.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So I've skipped to the end now.
So you guys have both seen it. Guys.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is this movie pro-gay? Or is it neutral on gay?
Neutral.
I don't think –
it's not relevant to gay.
Yeah, it's not –
I would say it
relevant.
Has a lot of positive messages.
Does the princess marry the prince at the end?
Oddly,
spoiler.
Yeah, that's a spoiler.
Let me put it this way. Is the old lady mad because the princess – because the female lead doesn't marry the male character at the end?
What old lady?
I think it is left open about whether they will, about whether the straight couple will get married.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I'm not aware that there are any explicitly gay relationships
at any
point.
Wow.
There's an out-of-place snowman. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. Who is Josh Gad.
One of the reasons I haven't seen this movie is I just really hate the look of that snowman character.
Yeah, it's terrible. It belongs in an entirely different movie. But that's just my opinion.
Okay.
He's the plucky comic relief.
Yeah.
He is the Jar Jar of this movie.
Oh, yes. Boy.
No, yes. Not really. He's better than Jar Jar. All right.
Well, we got about 7 minutes.
That's not setting a high bar. He's better than Jar Jar.
So we got a, I got a pissed off Australian guy.
Okay.
You do?
He sounds pissed off.
All right.
Question on the right of women to veil. Here in Australia, I can assure you that if one were to walk around with their face covered in any other way. If one were to go walk about with your face covered in any other way, motorcycle helmet, ski mask, gorilla mask, etc., they would promptly be stopped by the police on any of a number of minor semi-made-up infringements. Intent to cause fear is always popular. Do you feel that religious people should be treated the same in this circumstance? I.e., should they be permitted to do something that others aren't allowed to do due to their cultural religious identity? Yeah, I keep always kind of sliding into Howard Cosell, the American sportscaster with an Australian accent. Well, dude, you just said semi-made-up infringements. I don't think that I don't think anybody should be have semi-made-up infringements
held
against them. So, and since I don't know what is left when the semi part, the semi-made up part of those infringements goes away, I don't know that there's anything left there to be imposed on Muslims. But, in general, I think personally, and you guys can respond in a second, I think it is a huge mistake to make special exceptions for religious beliefs.
Yeah.
It's a gigantic can of worms, started here in the U.S., as I recall, with letting Rastafarians have marijuana for their religious ceremonies. And no, I think that's a huge mistake. I think that that the laws ought to change to be more reasonable rather than the laws getting set aside because of unreasonable demands driven by religious belief. That's my view.
Yeah.
But and, I don't know what's – I. But I honestly –
basically, changing the laws for religion is basically, you know –
that's Sharia.
It's
a different set of laws.
It's privileging one set of people over another.
Right.
It's discriminatory.
We should not, have different laws for that. You know, I mean, people with religious views can vote. And they can make their views known, and they can have their chance to influence the decisions.
The
lawmakers when the laws are made. And that is it. That is the extent of it.
But everybody's got to operate under the same rules.
I would think.
Otherwise,
Russell,
it's
what do you think?
Chaos.
I'm sure you're right.
I'm sure you're right because I haven't been paying attention because I've been browsing inner tubes.
Also, yes, the Australian accent sounds very silly, but so does Kim Hans. So, you know, whatever. I didn't write down this person's name. I apologize for that. Unnamed person in Australia.
Okay. Cool.
Okay. We're winding down. Dennis, how much time do you need for your outro?
Oh, just
a few
moments.
Well, I don't have anything short enough to do in the last few seconds. Oh, no, that's the beginning of a long thing.
Yeah.
So let's just take a few seconds. Anything?
I'm ready to head out.
Well, just give me another couple of minutes to burn some time. So, anything else going on? Anybody wants to talk about? We did have Russell. You sent me a link to a Pat Robertson story.
Yeah.
Pat Robertson said this crazy thing about Jesus wouldn't have been baking wedding cakes for gay people. He would have been stoning them to death.
Wow.
Or maybe a very charitable way to read what he said was that they would have already been stoned to death so they wouldn't have been around for Jesus to bake their wedding cakes.
To bake them into cakes.
Now, I am not familiar. I am not familiar with Jesus's big history in the baking industry of Jerusalem, but but then he says, he kind of wistfully says, but we don't have that sort of thing in our culture, so there you go. Speaking of stoning.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, what a shame.
We just have to put up with it.
Oh, hey, I have something to say.
It's just astonishingly weird. This guy who, last episode, I think, we were reading the things by him saying you gotta accept the scientific evidence on evolution.
Right.
Just totally don't care about anything, you know, real.
Probably stone.
Let's just be crazy lunatics that want to stone people to death because that'll play great.
Yeah.
Yes, Russell.
If you're in Texas, Camp Quest loves that people have been donating so much, but they really, really, really need volunteers more than anything.
They need
people
your time.
To go away for a week and be a counselor or something. Camp Quest has gotten so popular that the list of people in there fills up super fast, and what they'd really like is to be able to pull off another week so that they can have another wave of campers come in.
Right. I'll go in and volunteer and show the children Frozen.
Get out of here, well-behaved Mormon woman.
It won't count against my score because it's for the children.
Okay, Dennis.
All right.
Take us out, man.
No, I'm so
Bye,
serious. Please volunteer your time for Camp Quest.
Is there
Quest
a link you can?
Camp Quest Texas. Just Google it. I don't know.
Camp Quest Texas.
Bye, everybody.
All right. Well, that was our show, and whether you liked it is up to Heisenberg, I suppose. If the cat lives, we'll be back with another Eigenstate in 2 weeks on April the 16th. Until then, avoid all retro-causal memes.
You got to